I'm Brady Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Kamala Harris gets a green light from Democratic leaders. Plus, I'll go through some of my ballot selections for the 2024 primary coming up in just a few short days from now. Also,
50th, dead last.
Bob Ferguson's latest ad is even more dishonest than his last. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Ladies and gentlemen, my fellow Americans, it is time to think about what can be. Don't make me laugh, Nicole. I was really going to deliver that. What can be unburdened by what has been. And what has been is Joe Biden. What can be is Kamala Harris, who has now been anointed by Democrats, primary process be damned, to be the party's nominee for the next president of the United States. I was only, what, 5 days late? I'm a little mad at myself for making my predictions so specific, because my predictions were always that it was going to be Gavin Newsom. I should have just made a prediction that Joe Biden wouldn't be on the ticket and that they would replace him with somebody. And then I would be extra righteous today and extra correct. So this happened on Sunday. And it's just fascinating to me that this didn't happen in some sort of publicized speech. This is a huge moment in American history. It's an incredible series of events that we've been through over the last 3 weeks for Joe Biden to post on X that he's not running for the president anymore. I mean, he also put out kind of a letter and a statement, but his tweet read as follows: "My fellow Democrats, I've decided not to accept the nomination and to focus all of my energies on my duties as president for the remainder of my term. My very first decision as the party nominee in 2020 was to pick Kamala Harris as my vice president, and it's been the best decision I've made. Today, I want to offer my full support and endorsement for Kamala to be the nominee of our party this year. Democrats, it's time to come together and beat Trump. Let's do this." I mean, first, it's obviously very significant. I mean, Democrats could have saved themselves a lot of panic, a lot of hand-wringing, had they done this 7 months ago. For people who've been honest with themselves, and even a lot of Democrats I spoke with, it was painfully obvious that Joe Biden was not only barely fit to continue being the president of the United States, but was clearly in such a state of mental decline that there was no way he was going to be able to serve another 4 years if he won in November. So Democrats have no one to blame but themselves for this absolute disaster. And it's, you know, I'm glad that this is, I'm happy for Joe Biden and his family. Even though I don't know to what extent Jill Biden was the one, you know, forcing him to stay in the race, but this is a guy who has been a public servant for a long time. You can disagree with his politics, but at the end of the day, he deserves some peace and relaxation in his final however long on this planet with his family and his grandkids, etc. So I'm happy for him. I'm happy the political machine was finally willing to spit him out and let him do his thing. Now, there's going to be obvious and rightful questions about his ability to continue to be president of the United States for the next few months. But I don't know. I think that's a distraction for Republicans to focus on that. Let it go. Let Joe Biden go. Focus, laser focused, on now beating who will probably be the Democratic nominee, Kamala Harris. So Kamala Harris, in response to her anointment, tweeted, "On behalf of the American people, I thank Joe Biden for his extraordinary leadership as president of the United States and for his decades of service to our country. I am honored to have the president's endorsement, and my intention is to earn and win this nomination. I will do everything in my power to unite the Democratic Party and unite our nation to defeat Donald Trump and his extreme Project 2025 agenda. If you're with me, add a donation." I got to get that money flowing in. And they did have pretty good fundraising numbers. So certainly, you know, there had been some big donors that cut off. They're like, "I'm not donating another dime as long as Joe Biden's the nominee." So you're going to see that money start to flow in again. Gosh, a couple things. Let me just say for the record, like, I know a lot of people are putting out clips about Kamala Harris's incessant cackling and her dancing and things. That stuff doesn't really bother me. I mean, I cackle incessantly. I'm not the vice president of the United States, but that to me is also a distraction. Like, Yeah, she laughs weird and a lot, and when she's uncomfortable and doesn't know what she's talking about. Yeah, there's some videos of her with Montel Williams as his, like, arm piece and all this stuff. What's more dangerous and concerning is her utter lack of ability to do the job, is how unserious she is as a potential president of the United States. This has been a meteoric and unearned rise to power for Kamala Harris. She was a first-term United States senator. And there are some, look, I said this about J.D. Vance. He's also a first-term United States senator. I also said that I thought it was an odd pick for Donald Trump, for someone who's that untested. So it's just, there's so many failures to focus on. I mean, this is the person who was placed in charge of the border crisis. How's that going? Not well. Who, like, didn't even want to admit that she hadn't been down to the border as the vice president. And, you know, when you look at the economy and the other issues facing Americans domestically, what would she do different than Joe Biden? Nothing. So she's, the party as a, and her as a nominee, they're no better off. Her ideas are the same. And then when you look at the global stage, the thought of Kamala Harris, like, sitting in the same room with a former KGB agent in Vladimir Putin and, like, that going well is laughable. Can you imagine her trying to, like, tell Vladimir Putin how it's going to be, or Xi Jinping, or Kim Jong-un? That's laughable to me. And it's not because she's a woman. It's because of how she has performed as vice president of the United States. It's not because she cackles incessantly, although I think that's also embarrassing. It's not because she dances with people. Fine, that's cool. Dance away. I think that's great. It's because of her performance, her lack of knowledge about really anything that she's been put in front of a microphone to talk about. From electric buses in Seattle where she walked, the wheels on the bus go, I mean, she didn't even know what to say. So she's, like, singing a song talking about loving yellow school buses. It's laughable. It's a parody of what a serious vice president looks like. But then, you know, you look at all the ways that Democrats are going to try to now prop her up. Because I'll just say this clearly. I think I tweeted out something similar over the weekend. If Democrats truly believed that Donald Trump was an existential threat to our nation, to, like, our very existence as a country, they would do better than Kamala Harris. Bottom line. They would choose a nominee who could actually win and who was up to the task. But instead, they're stuck with Kamala Harris. There might be some other reasons for that when it comes to ballots and stuff. But honestly, it's because they have shoehorned themselves into a DEI choice. And for Democrats who would say, oh, you can't call her a DEI choice, Biden called her a DEI choice. Biden was pressured to pick a black woman as a vice president, and he made it clear that he would pick a black woman as a vice president. Democrats have been so identity obsessed. How would they skip over Kamala Harris? They couldn't do it. How would you skip over the heir apparent who's a black woman? You can't do it. So they're more concerned with not offending, you know, not seeming racist or sexist than they are with the threat to democracy that Donald Trump poses. If they really believed, again, he was an existential threat to our country, they wouldn't care about coming across as racist and sexist and bypassing a black woman. They would say it doesn't matter. Our very democracy is in peril. So we have to find the very best candidate for the job. But they didn't do that. So that tells you a lot about whether they really think our democracy is in peril when they pick Kamala Harris. But then right away, I was sitting at home watching, I think this was yesterday evening, watching CNN, and then something similar happened on The View. I just want to play you a couple clips. They are already suggesting, putting out there that, oh, like, if Kamala doesn't win, it's just racism and sexism. Watch.
And look, let's just be honest about this. You can be certain that racism and sexism, if not directly from the Trump campaign, from other forces, are going to come flying into this campaign.
Yeah, that's really sad to hear that, but obviously true, John.
But what she needs is our faith in her and our willingness to fight back for her as we hear all of what we know are going to be a lot of misogynistic, mm-hmm. you know, sexist, racist attacks on her. We got to be ready.
Yeah, I don't expect any less from Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, or any more from Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal than that of Washington State. But from John King, who's a pretty solid reporter for CNN, for him to say out of nowhere with nothing to point to that you can be sure that there's going to be a lot of racist and sexist, if not from the Trump campaign, from other people around the Trump campaign. It's like, OK, so now you're reporting on the news that you've made up in your mind that hasn't even happened yet. I'd also point out it's not racist, nor is it sexist, to point to someone's clear deficiencies in experience, their clear deficiencies in how they put themselves forth to not only the American people, but the country, and their clear failures on policy. So that's where they're going to blur the line. So God forbid you criticize Kamala Harris for the failure at the southern border. Racist. Sexist. God forbid you criticize Kamala Harris for what seems to be her lack of knowledge on domestic issues and certainly issues on foreign affairs. Racist. Sexist. No, it's not racist and sexist to make legitimate criticisms about someone's qualifications and capability to be the president of the United States. So it's very important for everyone in the media, I mean, we're never going to see it from CNN, MSNBC, etc., to make sure that there's a clear distinction between actual racism and sexism, which, yeah, will there be some in the depths of the internet? There's always racism and sexism in the depths of the internet. And so a clear distinction between that and legitimate criticisms and reportings about her capability to do the job. That's the difference. And that's also why I kind of want the conservative media to focus more on the meat and potatoes and less on the incessant cackling and stuff like that. I think some of that makes her human. You know, I, like I said, you know, I'm awkward and weird sometimes, and I laugh and I snort and I swear and stuff. Does that make me unserious? Does that make me unintelligent? I don't think so. So, yeah, I mean, you know, some of that when you're talking about when I had the juxtaposition of her and Vladimir Putin. Like, I don't want her cackling in front of Vladimir Putin, okay? I get it. But, like, there are so much stuff from a policy perspective, from a meat and potatoes perspective, that if you focus on, it's much harder for them to say, oh, that's sexist. Oh, that's racist. But who brought, and again, remember, who brought race into this in the first place? Who brought race into this in the first place? Democrats and Joe Biden, when they insisted that he choose someone not based on skill or ability, but based on gender and skin pigmentation, they brought race into it. And that, frankly, is pretty racist and sexist, if you ask me. Seattle Times also jumping on board with this. God, the obsession with identitarianism. At this juncture in our nation and in our world, we've got two wars going on. We've got Americans who are struggling. We've got a border crisis, a domestic national security crisis, and so many other things. This is the headline from the Seattle Times. Harris could become the first female president after years of breaking racial and gender barriers. Who cares? Who cares? So many critical things to talk about. And again, I always use the phrase, you'll hear me say skin pigmentation as opposed to race, because I think that underscores how absurd it is. Like, literally, we're talking about the pigmentation of someone's skin as some sort of thing to celebrate or like rise them up to the most powerful position in the world. It's so absurd to me. Two things that she has absolutely no control over. The gender she was born. You have no control over the gender you were born, just to be clear. And skin pigmentation. And those are the things that we choose to focus on, as opposed to all the many things she does have control over. Like her ideas. It's truly insane. You know who's really excited? Oh, hi, Nicole. Hi. You know who's really excited about Kamala Harris?
Who's that?
Bob Ferguson.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Shocking. But you put this in there and I'm like, I don't know if I care to read what Bob Ferguson says about Kamala Harris. And then I rethought it because you know how giddy he is right now?
Oh, yeah.
That a former attorney general was like launched into the vice presidency and then launched to be a presidential contender. You know, he's just sitting there like, I'm going to be the next president of the United States.
So excited.
Oh, my God. He's so excited. I'm not going to read this whole thing because He says the Biden-Harris administration has accomplished so much for America. President Biden, I know Vice President Kamala Harris. She was Attorney General of California when I was first elected Washington's Attorney General. She's smart, hardworking, and tough. She'll never back down to powerful interests. She genuinely cares about people. So he's all in on that. And he's
and I love how he says, let's go. Like, he's young and hip.
Let's go.
Go away.
Yeah, no, if I know you want to be young thing, and hip, you go. You have to have at least four or five O's, and then it has got to be an exclamation point.
Exactly.
Let's go. Not let's go. And then he talks about how the stakes for November are extraordinarily high. I agree, which is why it's very odd to put all your eggs in the Kamala Harris basket. Very, very strange. I can't get over that. I cannot underscore that enough. Imagine, just try for a second, to put yourself in the mind of someone who actually believes our democracy and our democratic republic is in peril. Like, everything that we've fought for as a nation is in jeopardy. And then you say, who can stop that from happening? Kamala Harris. It's like that doesn't compute, right? So again, that tells you a lot about whether they actually believe democracy is in peril. They clearly do not. So we'll have a lot on this. We just figured we got to start the show with it. What a wild few weeks in America. You couldn't write a movie this crazy. And it also shows you, because the assassination attempt was it like the 17th? No, it was before that. Like, it was a couple weekends ago, right? God, time flies.
It was 13th? Last weekend.
Yeah, it was 13th, because they call it J13. So it was the 13th. So not even 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And look at how much has happened since then. The pace of American politics is insane. And it also shows you, like, Lord only knows where this race is going to be in a month or 2 months leading up to November. Wild. But we have tons of content.
You say we couldn't write it, but I mean, I think The Simpsons did.
I did see The Simpsons predicts everything. It's just wild. So you got to let's watch Simpson reruns to see what's going to happen. But closer to home, you should have got your ballot in the mail over the weekend. If you don't have it, you should have it by like today or tomorrow. If you're in some rural areas, I got my ballot. I filled that thing out so damn fast. And I was good. I told Nicole, I was like, I'll bring my ballot in. And then I realized I already put it in the mail. So I can't go fishing in the mailbox for it. This is the most important election, certainly, of my lifetime so far. Not only what's happening nationally, but this for Washington State, for the state I want to call home for the rest of my life, the state that has been my de facto home for most of my adult life. This is a make or break moment. This is the moment where we decide, simply put, do we like the direction of things or not? If you like the direction of things, you can vote for the likes of Bob Ferguson. You can vote for a lot of the Democratic incumbents. If you don't like the direction of things, then we need to make some serious decisions about the path forward. And maybe we ought to try something new for the next 4 years. You know, Democratic control in the governor's office for 40 years, Democratic control for much of the last 24 legislative sessions in Olympia. They've had a monopoly on control for the last 8 legislative sessions in a row. So to me, this is a change election. Now, there are a couple incumbents who I've decided to vote for, but I posted a picture of my ballot on social media. And then I also highlighted a few key races and told you how I voted. Now, these are not endorsements. The only race I've endorsed in is the race for governor. I've endorsed Dave Reichert. I have not endorsed in any other race. These are who I voted for. And take it or leave it. I'm happy to talk to you a little bit more if you have questions about my individual choices. I selected Dave Reichert for governor, Dr. Raul Garcia for U.S. Senate, Carmen Goers for Congress in the 8th Congressional District where I live, Denny Heck for Lieutenant Governor, a Democrat. I'll dive more into that momentarily. Pete Serrano for Attorney General, Jamie Herrera Butler for Lands Commissioner, David Olson for the next Superintendent of Public Instruction, and Judge Dave Larson for Supreme Court Justice. So there were a few of those choices that people got a little, they were saying, what the heck? Denny Heck, what the heck? So I have, and I did vote for Denny Heck for Lieutenant Governor, and he's one of the few Democrats that I voted for on the ballot, and I'll tell you why. So Denny Heck, first of all, I think he is a very kind, down-to-earth, genuinely good human being, so that's a good starting point. Now, that doesn't mean I agree with all his policies, but the position that he's in as Lieutenant Governor is a very procedural position. They're the president of the Senate, and there is so much knowledge and, again, procedure that you have to have in that position to make sure that the Senate is running well. He does that job very well. He plays umpire very, very well as the president of the Senate, and he does it in a very unbiased fashion. One of the things that the reasons he earned my vote is when Democrats were trying to push through in the final days of the legislative session a ban on natural gas, in effect, HB 1589, and they cobbled something together, tried to throw it down for a vote at the last minute, and he said this.
There is no other way of saying this clearly. The president is troubled as he observes that the drafting and construction of this bill is very simply a hot mess.
He earned my vote with that. I think he does his job very well. The job of lieutenant governor is not a job that allows for a lot of partisanship. I think it ought to be a nonpartisan position, as some of our other positions are, where you don't actually see their name next to the ballot. I don't believe a lieutenant governor is like that. Because there's really not a lot of room. I mean, you're not pushing through policies, for instance. So I think he does a great job. He has shown that he can do it in a nonpartisan, non-biased manner. And I've also heard an awful lot of good things from Democrats and Republicans about his not only ability, but the effort he puts in proactively to try to bring Democrats and Republicans together behind the scenes to come up with solutions. That really matters to him. I've heard that time and time again. So Lieutenant Governor Denny Heck gets my vote to remain in office. And also Dave Reichert's going to be the next governor of Washington State. So I think it'd be nice to have a Republican as the governor, a Democrat as the lieutenant governor. And then another question I get all the time is about judicial races. I just want to point out the importance of this because they don't get as much coverage. There is an open seat in the state Supreme Court. I have selected Judge Dave Lorson on my ballot. We had him on the Undivided podcast. He's very, the Constitution is very important to him, but he's very pragmatic. The balance that he would bring to the state Supreme Court, especially right now, is very, very necessary, long overdue, quality human being, a great jurist. So Judge Dave Lorson is my choice for that vacant seat on the state Supreme Court. So feel free to ping me with questions you have about other races. I'll just note, I don't give recommendations typically in races in districts that I don't live in and I don't vote in, because I think it's weird for me to tell people in an area where I don't even live who should represent them. Now, I can tell you a little bit about individual candidates. You know, for instance, we're going to be talking about a race up in Snohomish County in a legislative district there coming up on the show in a few days that has to do with a candidate who's lied about his military service. But I try to kind of, like, you know, legislative districts are very specific. And if you live in one, and I don't live there, I live in East King County, I don't want to sit here and wax poetic about the kind of representation I think that you need. All right, so we have much more election-related news coming up. We'll take a quick detour around that to talk about electric rates momentarily. First, I've been encouraging you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. You know, times are tough, budgets are tight. You need insurance. You can't get rid of that from your budget, but you can have a company like First Mark Insurance that's been doing this for a long time. Take a look at your insurance needs. Go out, shop their carriers for you for free, and they might be able to not only get you better insurance, but save you money. That has been the case for so many Undivided viewers and listeners who've taken the First Mark Challenge. Maggie said that she had to resign from her job after an unexpected situation. So the first thing she's like, I need to see where I can save some money while I figure this out. And then she had gotten her latest car insurance estimate. It went up again. So she's like, okay, I heard you advertise for First Mark. I was skeptical, but now I'm going to do it. She said, I'm very happy to report. I was connected with Levi at First Mark, and after he reviewed my car and home insurance, he recommended a new bundle that was half the cost and better coverage. I was very surprised and so thankful. So Maggie, welcome to the First Mark family. It is a family that is growing by the day. If you'd like to see if you can save a little bit of money on your insurance, reach out to First Mark, do the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. They work for you. As Democrats in Washington state try to push ahead to an all-electric future and carry out Governor Jay Inslee's climate legacy, we've already warned you what some of the implications of what they're doing are. We see it at the gas pump, for instance, with the Climate Commitment Act, although Governor Inslee swears up and down that the CCA isn't raising gas prices. We know that it is. It's not debatable at this point. And then when you look at their push to move away from natural gas, we have an electrical grid that already can't handle the customers that it has to serve. So when you remove natural gas as an option, are we going to be prepared to deal with that? The answer is no. And at the same time, you're going to see your energy rates spike. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. So there was an article out from the Center Square that honestly is terrifying for people who are already underwater financially, who cannot see their energy rates increase anymore. The headline, Seattle may jolt electric rates due to high demand as state pushes electrification. And make no mistake, they are pushing for full electrification. They tried to ban it in 1589. They watered down the language to make it more palatable to a few moderate Democrats who were on the fence. But there's a couple initiatives that have to do with, you know, energy related things. But for instance, Initiative 2066, which would say you can't ban natural gas. If that doesn't pass, they're going to be fully emboldened to go ahead and do it in the next legislative session. The Center Square writes, the city of Seattle is expecting rates for City Light customers to rise 5.4% next year due to increasing demand, extreme weather, and impacts of low water flow on hydroelectric generation capacity, even as the state continues to push for a total transition to clean energy. A 5.4% increase is about $4.88 more per month for a typical residential bill, or $1.95 more per month for a typical residential utility discount program bill. According to Seattle City Light CEO Don Lindell, retail demand from building electrification is growing three times faster than projected in 2022, and transportation electrification demand has increased 70% above 2022 estimates. So the state is pushing electrification, whether it's on public transportation or businesses or homes, but the capability is not keeping up with that, not even close. And they don't even have a plan to make sure it keeps up with it. I mean, think about this. It's really government at its worst. It's like, we want to push for you to do something, even if our system isn't capable of handling it. It's really wild. The Center Square continues, this again from Lindell with City Light. In a matter of years, demand will outpace energy savings from efficiency. During a presentation to the Seattle Sustainability City Light Arts and Culture Committee on Friday, Seattle City Light officials revealed that the estimated grand total of needed resources in 2022 was 696 megawatts over 20 years. This year, the grand total of needed resources over the next 20 years is 2,563 megawatts. That is a 268% increase in estimated resources. City Light's admission of electrical capacity not reaching the demand exemplifies the obstacles facing Washington as it works to transition its counties and cities to clean energy. But do they even care? We've never had a good explanation. And this is with so many things. For instance, on their attempts to let PSE move away from natural gas. We've never had a good explanation about how they propose homeowners pay for that. Talking about $30,000 to $40,000 to electrify your home. Don't you think one of the biggest things, the most important things for them to cover before they move in that direction is how they propose a middle class and even, hell, upper middle class household pays for that? But no, that's something they don't even want to discuss. And then when it comes to the push for electrification, okay, we want people to electrify your homes, electrify your businesses. We want public transportation to be electrified. Gee, what do you think should be the number one issue they should be addressing first and simultaneously as they push for electrification? Whether there's enough supply, whether the grid can handle it. This is indicative of so much stuff that we've seen our state government in particular do, is they put the cart before the horse. Is that, oh my God, did I get a metaphor right on the first time?
I think you got that one.
Holy smokes. Cart before the horse on so many things. Police defunding. This was a good example where they said, oh, we want to take money away from the police department and we're going to, you know, try to get more of these non-armed first responders. Well, you yank money before the other ideas are even in place. It's like, no, set up the alternatives to policing. Let's see how those go. Let's see if you can staff them. Let's see how they work. And then if they're going great, and yeah, we can take some money away from the police by all means. But no, they yank it and then they do it and it's all a failure all the way around. On every single issue, including electrification, you see examples of how they're pushing for an outcome without making sure that we can get to that outcome by having whatever infrastructure in place that we need to be in place first. This is the government at its worst. It's government bureaucracy at its worst. And who ends up paying for it? The poor and the middle class. It truly makes no sense. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter while you're there. All right, I would say it's one of those days where we should do a double dose of unbelievable. First, Bob Ferguson released his second political ad of the campaign cycle. And not only is it more dishonest than the first, it is genuinely offensive to our men and women in uniform. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right. So let me just start by playing the latest ad that Bob Ferguson put out. I mean, you really are going to have to just, I don't know. Let's take a deep breath first. Nicole, do you want to join me?
Yes, I'm joining.
I've learned in yoga, it's in four, out four.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
Yoga is like CrossFit. If you're doing it, you have to talk about it.
Yes, I've noticed.
Oh, okay. all right. Bob Ferguson's latest political ad.
50th, dead last. Washington has the lowest number of law enforcement officers per capita of any state. That's unacceptable. As governor, I'll fix it. Public safety is my top priority. I'll hire more police and first responders, create a statewide response unit to tackle the fentanyl crisis, and invest the $1 billion I won from drug companies to increase treatment. Washingtonians must feel safe and be safe for our state to thrive.
Wow, why didn't you say that for the last 12 years? Particularly the last 6 years. You expressed not a single one of those sentiments until you decided to run for governor, and you're trying to moderate your views. It's so offensive, though. You know, when you talk about, seems just aghast that we have the lowest number of police officers per capita of any state in the nation. Do you really think that that's going to be fixed by you being the governor? One of the reasons we have so many police officers leaving Washington State to work elsewhere is they feel politically supported elsewhere. They're putting their lives on the line every freaking day. And you're an attorney general who is 0 for 4 on the prosecution of police officers. So they're worried that they're going to go out, do their jobs, and a guy who would throw a police officer in prison for the rest of their lives just to score political points with his base, like, you think they want to work for you? And one of his, you know, key things, and you hear this from Democrats who are trying to act like defund never happened and that they never talked about it, is that they can just throw money at the problem. Like, oh, we'll give them big bonuses, retention bonuses, lateral bonuses. You cannot buy, I've said this a million times, you cannot buy their dignity and you cannot buy their lives. $30,000 doesn't cut it. $30,000 doesn't make this a better state to work in. It doesn't make it a safer state for law enforcement to work in. And it's shameful that you would think that you can buy their loyalty and their desire to put their lives in the line for you. And again, Bob Ferguson, what did he say? Well, Seattle was talking about defunding the police. Do you remember what he said? Oh, that's right, nothing. He didn't say anything. As one of the most prominent Democrats in the state of Washington, as the state's chief law enforcer, he said nothing. And now he wants to sit here and act horrified that we have the lowest number of police officers per capita of any state in the nation. Find me. If you're watching, if you are a law enforcement officer currently serving who would love to work, not a political appointee or elected, not a sheriff who's elected or appointed. If you are a rank and file police officer, sheriff's deputy, state trooper in the state of Washington who would like to work for Bob Ferguson, please get in touch with us. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. I would love to hear from even one. It's you think that, you know, what you're going to do now matters. What you have said and not said, more importantly, not said, speaks volumes. And let's also talk about, you know, when he's, oh, there's ways I'm going to make the state safer. He has the audacity to suggest that he's going to help fight the fentanyl crisis and make progress on the fentanyl crisis. This is the guy who not even 3 years ago, came out, was one of the first elected officials in the nation to say he wanted to decriminalize hard drugs. He said it in a KUOW article. It's still there in print. He wanted to move away from the war on drugs into the him. That meant, and he urged at the time the legislature that was dealing with how to fix the Blake decision, which nullified our state's felony drug possession statute. Instead of fixing it to make sure we had a statute on the books, what did he tell lawmakers to do? He urged the party in power to decriminalize hard drugs in the middle of an overdose crisis that is killing people every single day in our state at record levels. And he's the guy who now says in TV ads that he's got a plan to deal with the fentanyl crisis. I haven't found one former drug addict or family member of a current drug addict who believes drug decriminalization is the way. Again, let's find them. If you are a former drug addict, if you are the family member of a current drug addict and you think decriminalizing fentanyl is the key to solving the fentanyl crisis, please get in touch with us. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. I don't think they exist. It is shameful when lives are on the line in our state. You know, other states be damned. Whenever I talk about the crime crisis here, people want to say, well, look at Chicago. We're way worse off than Chicago or we're way better off than Chicago or Baltimore. I don't care about those places in those states. I care about Washington State, and our crime crisis is out of control. At the same time, Bob was over on X talking about, oh, some violent crimes and some crimes have actually dropped in Washington State, you know, under my leadership as the AG. Crimes where people, you know, property crimes, nobody's reporting those anymore. You've decimated the ranks of police officers so much, people got so tired of calling 911 and waiting 9 hours to get no response that they're like, screw it, I'll just pay for it out of pocket because I can't have my insurance pay for it because if I file an insurance claim, they're just going to drop me. That's the situation people are in, so they're just not calling the police anymore. So that, to me, honestly, like, I've been annoyed at Bob here and there. I don't particularly love many, if any, of his policies. I'm obviously supporting his opponent. But when you have the audacity to push out a probably million-dollar ad buy to tell lies about your support for law enforcement, it's sickening. Genuinely sickening. I'm not going to say no, because we're going to see if anybody contacts us. I would venture to bet 99.999% of law enforcement in this state are dreading it. They're dreading the possibility of a Governor Bob Ferguson who said jack when it mattered the most. Get real. One other thing I want to mention today, we're going to cover this more in depth on the show tomorrow, but since we're talking about Bob Ferguson's dishonest ads, they have gotten so dishonest, in fact, that on July 16th, the Dave Reichert campaign sent a letter. We got a copy of it this morning to King TV and Kong TV. So that's Como, or King, no, King and Kong is like the two stations owned by King, right? And I'm not sure we're going to reach out to them to see if they've sent a similar letter elsewhere, but Bob's been airing a lot of ads on King and Kong. And the Reichert campaign sent a letter saying, you have an obligation as a news entity not to allow such deceitful ads to be run. It said, so it goes through specifically on the issue of abortion. And, you know, Bob Ferguson running these ads claiming, you know, Dave Reichert is going to take away a woman's right to choose when Dave Reichert is on the record saying the opposite. And when Dave Reichert has also pointed out that he could not do that if he wanted to. He could not do that if he wanted to. So in this letter, they said broadcast licensees have a legal responsibility to review and to eliminate any false, misleading, or deceptive materials contained in advertising, including political advertising that is not actually a use of the broadcast station. Further, now more than ever, broadcasters also have a moral responsibility to refrain from airing false and deceptive advertisements. We implore you to stand up for the truth and put a stop to these false attacks airing on your stations. Based on the foregoing, we respectfully demand that your stations immediately cease the airing of this false and misleading advertisement and further request that you reject any attempts by the Ferguson campaign to purchase time for the future airing of this advertisement because its materials and misstatements of fact are defamatory in nature. Now, I don't know if they're going to get any traction with this, but I think trying to push back is appropriate. And I've said this, I think it's shocking the amount of dishonesty in political ads. And Democrats aren't the only party that does that. Republicans have been dishonest in their political ads, too. And I struggle with it because I'm like, what is the appropriate entity to fact check those things? It's not the government. Some people have said, oh, we need, you know, kind of a Ministry of Truth sort of thing to like fact check voter guides and political ads and mailers. No, I don't want anyone involved with the government, appointed by the government or whatever, to be fact checking anything. It also freaks me out, to be honest, to have media entities fact checking something. You think they're going to fact check fairly? You think they're going to fact check a Republican ad and a Democratic ad with the same vigor? I don't think so. So I still think it falls to individual stations and campaigns to call out lies and deceit. But there is a genuine question there. What is the responsibility of a TV station when they're given an ad to air, when they sell that airtime for $350,000, probably $500,000 at this point in the political campaign, when they're given $500,000 to air an ad, what is their responsibility if that ad is blatantly false? Do you believe they have a responsibility to reject an ad, to pull an ad from the air if there's proof that the claims made in it are false? I tend to think that, yes, there's some level of responsibility there. Look, TV stations make a ton of money during election campaigns. The local TV stations will be rolling in the dough by the time November comes around. And I get it. Money's hard to say no to. But if you're a news station and you're saying, what is King Five's slogan? Oh, we stand for truth. Mm-hmm. Like, look, if you stand for truth, can you really keep airing, even if you made $500,000 off of it, an ad where Bob Ferguson is making outright false and fear-mongering claims about Dave Reichert? And I would feel the same way. If Dave Reichert puts out an ad where he's making false claims, I will be the first one to call it out on the show. And I'll even probably call him personally about it. But I haven't seen such an ad from Dave Reichert yet. And I don't think that I will. So it's very interesting. We're going to dive into that a little bit more on the show tomorrow, but let's get to our second dose of Unbelievable. Boop. Boop. I gave you two boops because I missed it on the first one, apparently. People get very angsty when I miss my boop. All right. I feel like we're screwed.
Well, that's sad.
We're not screwed. I believe in us. We can do this. It's just going to be really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And it's because, and I think it's challenging for us all, and this is the collective we, all of you watching, it's really hard to put ourselves in the mindset of voters who value such different issues. I have a hard time putting myself in the mindset of someone whose primary issue they vote on is abortion, even as someone who's pro-choice. Or the issue that they're voting on is the environment. Like, you do you. People are free to vote based on whatever issues they want. I'm not going to dictate that for them. I just have a hard time understanding it. And therefore, I have a hard time talking about something from that position. So there was this poll done. So just a little specifics on the poll before I dive into it. It was done by Survey USA from July 10th through July 13th, 708 likely voters in Washington state. And it looked at what the top issues are for Washington voters. The Seattle Times put this out. I thought their graph was a little bit of a disaster and hard to understand, so I took their graph and I made my own graphs that would be easier to understand. So let's look at among all likely voters. So again, 708 likely voters. So regardless of political affiliation, these are the biggest issues. So if you categorize them that way, right? Cost of living is number one at 25%. Protecting democracy, number two at 18%. Abortion, number three at 10%. Guns, number four. Climate change, five. Crime, six. Homelessness, seven. Gaza conflict aid, and then 2% said they're not sure. 1% selected something else. So that, again, is regardless of political party, when they take the totality of the answers, when someone's asked, what's your top issue when you go to vote, that's the order. So now let's look at the discrepancy between political party. And this is, again, where I look at how do you get through to when we're trying to change the trajectory of the state, like little steps. That's why one of the reasons I support Dave Reichert. He's not going to be the antithesis of the current leadership in Washington. He has a track record of being bipartisan, of being independent minded. He's not like the furthest right wing candidate. And, you know, I think incremental change is the key to long term change. But when I look at the huge discrepancy in top issues, I just have a hard time figuring out how do you convince this particular group of Democrats in Washington state to vote different. So let's look Republicans compared to Democrats. So Republicans, their top issue is cost of living, which is the top issue of voters nationally, the economy, right? Mm-hmm. The top issue for Democratic voters in Washington is protecting democracy. Now, look, if our Nicole's like, I can't.
I had this argument this weekend with a friend who said abortion was her top.
Well,
and I was like,
we'll get to that.
What? Like, it's not an issue.
It's really not. And, well, I'll get to that. But
with these two candidates.
Yeah.
They're on the same page.
Right. Protecting democracy. If democracy was really in peril, like if it genuinely was, that would be my top issue, too. You don't think I want to protect democracy? You don't think I want to protect this nation and everything it stands for? Of course I do. You will find few podcast hosts as patriotic as I am. But that being your top issue just shows that they have bought hook, line, and sinker into the lie that democracy is in peril. And it also, I think Democrats tend to be a little more wealthy. And so they don't care about cost of living. Screw you if you're having trouble making ends meet. They're going to act like they're the party of the poor and the working class. But they don't care if you're struggling because they're not. Second issue for Republicans, crime, followed by homelessness. That seems, if you look at the top actual crises in the state of Washington, where things are actually not going well and getting worse, that's cost of living, crime, and homelessness. And that would be my order as well. It would be cost of living, crime, and homelessness. And then you look at Democrats, their second highest issue is cost of living, and then it's guns. And when you look at that from a Democratic perspective, you're, of course, talking about gun control.
Right.
One of the challenges with asking people what their top issue is you're not asking for more information. So, for instance, a Republican, I think it's 1, 2, 3, 4. The fifth issue is guns on the Republican side. But that's probably Second Amendment rights, right?
Yes.
So you see the kind of discrepancy. But for Democrats, clearly you're talking gun control. We've already articulated all the reasons why in this state gun control policies have been a failure. You know, they have these big splashy headlines banning so-called assault weapons, weapons of war, yet gun crimes, shootings are through the roof because those aren't working. But you see, Democrats have bought hook, line, and sinker that gun control is the answer to dealing with our crime crisis. It's funny how guns is above crime on their list. Like they think that there's like the cause and effect is like totally backward. And then if we go down on the Republican side, abortion, but again, that could be, I don't know, loosening or tightening restrictions. Who knows? Abortion, guns, climate change, Gaza conflict, not sure. And then on the Democratic side, after guns, abortion, climate change, crime, homelessness. Think about this just for a second.
I know
it's insane.
Because that's what they're loudest on is right. Homelessness in Gaza. Like that, who are we hearing from? Those are not Republicans.
But also the Democrats who took this poll, there's almost no daylight between how many think the Gaza conflict is the biggest issue and how many mm-hmm. think homelessness is the biggest issue. Those two things are night and day. And yet you're like, towards the bottom of the list. Crime, 5%. Climate change, 8%. So that's a struggle for me. And that's a struggle for any Republican candidate running for statewide elected office in Washington. Is how do they pitch themselves to an electorate that thinks gun control is one of the most important issues, climate change and abortion, or even above crime and homelessness? How do you appeal to those voters while being genuine? How do you make them understand that you might care about those issues and you have every right to, But they're not issues that are clear and present crises in Washington state. They're not issues that, you know, the job of governor touches, like the conflict in Gaza. You might want to vote, you know, for someone based on that. Maybe that's their, you know, that's their presidential as well. They're factoring that in. And so fine, that makes sense with Gaza. But is that impacting your life? Unless you got someone over there, or, I mean, not as much as these other issues. So that's where I struggle with is, you know, choosing to vote based on an issue that will never actually impact your life directly. I'm not saying we shouldn't care about our neighbors and people around us and all of that, but it's a really hard thing for me to wrap my mind around.
I want to know what protecting our democracy means to both of those voters, right?
Right.
Those groups of voters, because I think to the Democrats, that's like, from Trump. Like, what right. What does that mean to you? From
yeah.
Trump. Well, what do you think he's going to do to take that away, right?
Right.
But I think that to Republicans, when that comes up on their list, it's like
voting.
It's voting mm-hmm. and integrity. And so
yep.
I think that those are two very different answers.
100%. Yeah. Protecting democracy, 6% on the Republican side. I tend to not think that's maybe no. some, but I tend not to think that's orange man bad and more, like you said, like voting and tightening mm-hmm. our voting laws and all that stuff. So it's just interesting for me to look at that. I mean, there'd be some slight changes, I think, in my order from the Republican side, but the top issues, absolutely, 100%, right on track. It's complicated.
The conversation I had with my friend who said she won't vote for a Republican because they want to take away, or because they don't have a right to do anything with my body. And I'm like, that's not a thing in this state. It's
yeah.
not a thing. And so I was thinking about that this weekend, and I was going to say, we need to tell Dave, one of your first ads should be, just to be clear, I'm doing nothing.
He did.
To take away.
That was his first
voters.
Ad.
Was it?
Have you not seen it yet?
Maybe I
did. Or he basically said, Bob Ferguson's lying about this. Voters
yes,
have and
yes.
I'm not going to do anything to change it.
Right.
That was one of his first ads. It was like a 15-second ad.
Yeah. Well, it needs to get out there more than.
It needs to be better. 100%. It needs to be better placement. Some of the ads yeah. I've seen on weird stations at weird times, it needs to be better placement. That costs money, right?
Bob
Ferguson has a huge war chest. He can afford to put ads in primetime. I don't know if the Reichert campaign can, but I have seen those out there. So it's just wild. You really have to almost, I don't want to use the word reprogram, but you have to try to make a convincing argument why some of these other issues, they are not the most urgent things as a state we need to be dealing with. So
I got so frustrated. I was like, how many abortions are you planning to have? That's the most important thing to your world right now, because I know that's not a thing.
Right.
And then this person, I don't think that's like something she does regularly or anything. And so I don't get it. I don't understand why people are so manipulated by the media and ads and liars.
Yeah. And look,
it's a lie.
I want the government to stay out of my business as well. It's
Absolutely.
The reason I took a very consistent position on the vaccine mandate. It's like, no, keep your jab out of my body unless I choose mm-hmm. to have it, right? And the same thing with, you know, the abortion debate. So I don't see a lot of, I know that even Republicans disagree with my assessment on that, because you're talking about an unborn baby and what is their say and all of that. But I just don't want the government to have a role in it. And so I have a hard time taking people seriously when they're like, yeah, get the jab or lose your job. But then they're like, my body, my choice.
Right.
It just doesn't make any sense to me.
No.
So, and vice versa for Republicans,
frankly.
It was
a very frustrating conversation that I had this weekend.
Like, see, at that point, you just got to check out. You just got to be like,
I know.
This isn't going to go anywhere. So, okay, here. Let's see. Let's get to some national news. This just dropped before our show. So Kimberly Cheadle, the head of the Secret Service. So she is under questioning in Congress, rightfully so. We haven't really discussed this on the show, the absolute disaster, the security disaster that led to the assassination attempt on the former president. It's all wild. And when you have something that just doesn't make sense, it opens up room for all these conspiracies. You know, a lot of them have been debunked. But there's this real question about this guy was flagged so long before the shooting even happened. How in the world did you allow him to get shots off on the president and on innocent bystanders? You know, I saw some dumb thing the Secret Service had said about, oh, that it had a pitched roof and that would have been dangerous to put people on a pitched roof. It was barely a pitched roof. And would it be more dangerous to put trained snipers on a pitched roof than it would be to allow them to shoot into a crowd and kill people? Makes no sense. And meanwhile, other sniper teams were on pitched roofs at the same time at the same event. Makes no sense. They're on the White House roof all the time. The top of it's flat, but the front of it is slope. Anyway, stupid. AOC. I'm going to cheer on AOC today, because Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was questioning the head of the Secret Service. And I rarely say this, she did it in a completely professional, nonpartisan fashion and called out the Secret Service for obvious failures, both in protecting Donald Trump, but in making sure that the agency gets to the bottom of what went wrong before someone else gets hurt. Here's a clip.
This is about the safety of some of the most highly targeted and valued targets internationally and domestically in the United States of America. So the idea that a report will be finalized in 60 days, let alone prior to any actionable decisions that would be made, is simply not acceptable. It has been 10 days since an assassination attempt on a former president of the United States, regardless of party. There need to be answers. How far away was that building from the president?
It was approximately 200 yards.
200 yards. Now, the individual used an AR-15 in order to act out his assassination attempt. An AR-15 has a range of about 400 to 600 yards. My question is, why does the Secret Service perimeter, why is the Secret Service protective perimeter shorter than one of the most popular semi-automatic weapons in the United States?
There are a number of weapons out there with a number of ranges. Again, an advance was completed. The determination of the perimeter, I'm not going to speak to specifics, but there are a number of factors that are taken into account.
What I'm hearing is that a perimeter was not established outdoors in an outdoor venue that would prevent an AR-15, which is one of the most common weapons used in mass shootings, from being able to be within the range of Secret Service protection.
A perimeter was established, and even though there were buildings that were outside of that perimeter, it wasn't just that building. There were a number of buildings in the area, and there was overwatch that was created to help mitigate some of those buildings.
If I were to state anything that I think is profoundly important, is that we need to have answers to the public. Ideally, I would encourage you and the agency to be more forthright with the members that still have yet to have their questioning, because the public deserves to have full confidence, and the stakes are too high. The violence that could break out in this political moment, regardless of party, in the event of someone getting hurt, constitutes a national security threat to the entire country.
100%. And she recognizes that if the Secret Service fell that short, failed that badly with former President Donald Trump, what's to say that they won't with other people? So you can't have any, she got into the whole guns and mass shooting things, but she has a good point. Why would a security perimeter, I only laugh so we don't cry, why would a security perimeter not account for the range of a gun like an AR-15? We're talking about, I believe it was about 150 yards away, which I've been told by people who even hunt casually, that's a pretty easy shot. So there's so much here that just does not add up. And I'm not falling into the conspiracy of it all, but it's like, it's a huge failure. And I'm glad that AOC recognized it. And one thing that was really important in what she said is she encouraged the Secret Service director to be more forthright with all the remaining members who had questions, not just the Democratic members, but all the remaining members that had questions, because the Secret Service director was just dodging actual questions left and right. And AOC's like, no, this is important. It's a matter of national security. We're talking about all this stuff that's already happened. So I applaud AOC, but also this hearing has been better than most. I've said I hate congressional hearings because it's grandstanding. It's, you're not even trying to ask a question. You're just trying to get a clip that you could post on your Instagram or your X. And it's like, there's so many important things. There has been a genuine effort, and you saw it from AOC, to try to actually figure out what freaking happened.
There was a couple of the grandstanding.
Well, yeah, I was going to have a little bit of those. There's always a few.
I'm just surprised it wasn't AOC. Gun, Republicans have stopped, gun control, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, God, yeah.
There was a couple of those, but...
by and large, better than the traditional congressional hearing. All right. I wanted to talk really quickly about the interview we had on Sundays with subscribers yesterday. We had on Ken Nielsen. He is the head of the Washington chapter of the Log Cabin Republicans, which, if you're not familiar, it's a group of gay Republicans. There's a national Log Cabin Republicans, and then most of the states have chapters. And the reason I want to have him on is there was something that happened at the RNC last week that really got no attention, because obviously there was some big news going on. The RNC and the Republican Party decided to take language out of their official party platform that talks about supporting only traditional marriage, so marriage between a man and a woman. Now, they didn't replace that with saying they support same-sex marriage, but they took out the language about traditional marriage. And for members of the Log Cabin Republicans, that was something they'd been pushing for a long time, to have Republicans take a more modern position, so to speak, on marriage equality. So Ken joined us to talk about that change from his perspective. So let's talk about what happened at the RNC this week, because obviously there's a lot of other, you know, the attempted assassination, Biden, and what's going on with him. So I felt like this really went under the radar, but my understanding of what the Republican Party has done is they didn't explicitly say we support gay marriage. They just took out language
that was
supporting traditional marriage.
Correct.
So how significant do you see that as being?
I think it's pretty significant as we go on, you know, from the RNC afterwards. I think because it's going to kind of sit, and we can, as gay Republicans, Log Cabin, or conservative-minded people, you can use that as kind of like a marketing tool towards people who might be on the fence about Republicans. I mean, there's a lot to be on the fence for both parties, but, you know, if someone's sort of right, a center-right independent, like you said you were once, mm-hmm. you know, you said you were to me a while back, that might be something that could swing them over to vote for the Republicans.
Yeah, and I would still consider myself a center-right independent, although I just last week said I'm going to vote for Donald Trump, and I've never voted for him before. But gay marriage has been an issue for me. Mm-hmm. All the social issues, I think, are things that have stopped me from just diving headfirst into the Republican Party. So when you say, you know, now you can turn around, and if there's attacks from Democrats to say, oh, they want to roll back, you know, same-sex marriage protections, do you think that this is a convincing enough step? Because again, they just took the language out. They didn't add any affirming language in.
Correct.
Is it convincing enough to just say nothing, basically?
I think it is. I think it's also going to take time. It's something that's new that happens. You got to wrap yourself around it, thinking Republicans are not anti-gay marriage.
Yeah.
And that might take a while for some people to wrap their heads around, like it was when in 2015 when it was the court ruled on it. It's like it took a while for me to wrap my head around it.
Yeah.
So it might take other people time to wrap their head around it as well.
Yeah, interesting conversation. We also talked about the Washington governor's race. You know, Dave Reichert was caught on tape saying, I think marriage is between a man and a woman. And I asked Ken how he felt about that, because he's clearly going to vote for Dave Reichert based on our conversation. And, you know, I thought that the clarity in which he looks at issues like that was really, really great. So you can watch my full interview with Ken on Sundays with Subscribers by becoming a subscriber, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. All right, we're going to get to questions, comments, your daily show poll coming up next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com says sooner rather than later, because what's happening in the market right now, you know, it's been in flux, interest rates are high, but there is, so the home prices are at a great place. But right now, what's driving some of the good bids and offers is that inventory is super low. So he's seeing inventory start to slightly increase, which means that there's not going to be as much competition for your home if you sell it. So he said, the sooner you can get it on the market, the better. Here's Wes.
King County, median $1 million. Homes are still selling very, very quickly. If you want to do something this year, give me a call. I'd love to start the process now. I think that things will be moving very swiftly through probably October. And then as the election starts to come out, you know, get closer, people always pump the brakes. But for all of you who are out there that are thinking like, oh, you know, I can't sell my home because I need X amount, you're probably at the peak right now. You know, it's probably worth more than it's ever been than previous times. So what are you waiting for?
Yeah, so check out West Jones at sellwithwest.com. You can start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, let's dive into our daily subscriber show poll. We asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X. I knew this was going to trigger some people. They were probably yelling at me through my through their screens. It was a positive poll today. I said, what quality do you believe will most help Kamala Harris in her bid for the presidency? That she's much younger than Trump, that she's a woman or BIPOC, that she has experience or her ideas and her record. And I was saying people would probably yell at me because I didn't put none of the above as an option, but you have to choose one. You have to choose one. Let's go to subscribers on X today for their thoughts. Subscribers on X saying they think that the fact that she's a woman and she's a woman of color will help her the most. DeJota says, I don't care what race or gender our president is. I only care that they are well qualified. I feel like the Democratic Party as a whole prioritizes things differently, however. Reagan says, I was torn between woman and BIPOC and being younger, but when I went with woman BIPOC because politics have boiled down to identity politics way too often in the last few years, because it will be easy to point out the contradiction if she claims Trump is too old but was totally supporting Biden. That's true. If they're going to go ahead, and you've seen already some Democrats start to do this, like, oh, now Trump's too old. It's like, okay, you didn't have a problem with Biden for all those months. Let's see. Wright and Edmund says, why not an option saying younger than Biden? That would be her quality to help her with Dems. Yeah, I mean, younger than Trump, younger than Biden. I think it's the same thing. Is her youth going to be something that benefits her as well? Let's see what's going on over on Patreon and Locals today. Yeah, I think the prevailing answer is that she's a woman and a person of color. Rick Alberts, there's just funny comments on here that are inappropriate, but well, it sure isn't her non-accomplishments, experience, or qualifications. She's done nothing other than draw a paycheck. Kathleen says, a large percentage of elected officials are Black, whereas this racial group represents only a small percentage of our population. Many years ago, a college-educated mom from a small group I was in declared she was voting for a woman as county assessor because, quote, there aren't enough women in politics. She didn't know who the woman was and also stated she had no idea what the position entailed. I am shocked at the amount of people who vote based on identity politics. It truly represents the majority of voters. And look, you know, identity politics and identitarianism. So there are some things that are different about, you know, women have a different perspective on the world, certainly. You know, you bring life into this world. You just, there's different, like, lived experience, actual lived experience. It does give you different, different perspective when you go to office. So I'm not saying that having a diverse set of viewpoints in Congress isn't good and important. I'm just saying that there are an awful lot of people of color. There are an awful lot of women who could bring that viewpoint and who are also very competent and capable. And so it shouldn't be this de facto, like, let's just fill the ranks so we can check some boxes. No, you can find very qualified women, very qualified people of color. I don't think that Kamala Harris fits into that box whatsoever. All right, let's see, getting to some comments. Matt Gilbert with a $10 super chat. Senators make bad presidents. Well, yeah, senators, for the ones who haven't governed, some senators were governors previously. I think governors make good presidents because they, you know, have to manage. They have to be an executive. But also, if, you know, Kamala Harris left the 2020 presidential race polling at 3%. 3%. Michael Bloomberg was polling higher than her when she tried to run for president herself. And now we're acting like the lady who got 3% is all of a sudden the savior of the Democratic Party. You might as well put Jay Inslee in there. And honestly, oh my gosh, brace for this, Nicole. Mm-hmm. I think Jay Inslee would make a better president than Kamala Harris.
Oh my gosh.
Would he not?
Yeah. I know.
Right?
I think you're probably...
Do you guys disagree? I think Jay Inslee would make a better president than Kamala Harris.
Well, then he wouldn't be trying to get a job with some green company, and that's the whole reason for all of his climate. So maybe that would, like...
It's fine. He could do it after the presidency.
Well, if no, I'm just saying, maybe that would deter him from being all climate all the time because he's not possibly auditioning for a job.
If my choices on the ballot for president of the United States were Kamala Harris and Governor Jay Inslee, I would absolutely choose Jay Inslee. That's how bad of a candidate Kamala Harris is. Bill Biz with the $20 super chat. Now that Biden has been burned by the Democratic establishment, I guess we'll be seeing a mainstream media avalanche of glowing accolades for Kamala in the coming months. Oh, you've already seen him. That's all it was on CNN, is like how wonderful Kamala Harris is and don't underestimate her, which Republicans shouldn't underestimate her. You know, Republicans have had a weird few weeks, but I think it's been a good few weeks for Trump. And can you say it's a good few weeks when he got shot? Probably not. But in terms of their electoral outlook, you know, but so much can change. And it would be really dumb for Republicans to let their foot off the gas right now. Adorable, deplorable. Why do we only get a tweet from the president? Don't we deserve a formal address at the least? And he's supposed to talk to the nation at some point this week. But I agree. It seems like a very odd thing to push out in that way. Very non-personal.
Without official letterhead, it seemed like just a blank white piece of paper. Yeah,
and I don't know
top.
If that's just what we saw, but it's still strange. Mm-hmm. John Handel, hey, we shouldn't be focused on her history. After all, we should think of what can be unburdened by what has been. My favorite quote ever. Kenneth Rausch, Brandy, what is happening is a setup. The Democrats are setting her up to fail when Trump wins and the country is thrown into a recession. The Democrats will be like, see what the Republicans have done. They destroyed the economy. Then they won't take credit for their poor policies. Yeah, I mean, we're already borderline recession. So I don't know if a President Donald Trump has enough time to be able to hold off on, you know, stop a recession from happening. So you're totally right. I think Democrats love Donald Trump. I really believe the Democrats love Donald Trump because they get to use him as a scapegoat for their failures. I said that when he left office, when he lost in 2020, and I was on mainstream news. I had a weekly commentary I did where I said that is like farewell to the greatest scapegoat Democrats have ever had. Now they'll have to own their failures. I mean, they still haven't. But when you look at Washington State and crime and all these things, they would just orange my bad. And then it's like you could ask him a question like, hey, homelessness is worse than ever before. What can you attribute that to? Donald Trump. It's like, so when he was gone, it was almost like that shield had been taken away from them. So make no mistake, Democrats absolutely love having Donald Trump in the political conversation. Mandy says it's not going to be Kamala, folks. Stay tuned. Interesting. Vivek seems to also, Vivek has been putting out all these like half, like, how do I explain it? Like very vague warnings about what's actually afoot. And it's like, just spit it out, Vivek. Just spit it out. Weisscastle, she laughs at the wrong time, which is what comes across so bad. Yeah, I think she laughs when she doesn't know what she's talking about. Mm-hmm. It's a nervous tick for sure. On the Ferguson dishonest ad, Krista M says, Fergie ad calls for more deep breaths. Bourbon might help. Well, I don't get it. More... I get it. Fergie ad calls for more than deep breaths.
Right.
Bourbon might help. Yeah.
Right, when we were taking our deep breath, we might need a few
deep
more.
Breath. 4 seconds in, 4 seconds out. Melissa Petrini with a $4.99 super chat. When they say a threat to democracy, they really mean a threat to Democrat supremacy. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Matt Gilbert, I already read one from Matt. Lieutenant Dan, 457, abortion often gets conflated with reproductive health care and not having access to contraceptives. Plan B and other reproductive health is a legitimate concern. Dave needs to make that clear. Yeah, 100%. I'll read Matt's because we love him, and he came to the Fentanyl Walk for Freedom this weekend. My 72-year-old mom said she could, and because he'd be mad in the comments if I dismissed him like that. My 72-year-old mom said she couldn't vote for Riker because of abortion. Luckily, she listened when I told her that Ferguson was lying. That's awesome.
I think it's a good lesson because it seems like me and Matt had the same conversations with people this weekend, and we really have to talk to people. You have to talk to your 100%. Friends and say, why aren't you, like, let's clarify this, because you're doing the work as an undivided listener, viewer, that, like, make sure that other people get the message, like, there are lies, we have proof, here you go.
Right, 100%. And that's all you can do.
And then walk away and say, I gave you the information. Just want you to know this is how things get better in this state.
Do with it what you see
fit.
See
you later.
Halfwit says, wow, I talk about AOC. Their screen name is Halfwit. They weren't calling AOC a halfwit. Wow, nail on the head. That is the AOC I remember from years ago. I hope she stays that way instead of what she's been. Mandy said, perception is the difference between the two parties. Beer goggles have consequences, just like perception on voter issues. Mark Thomas, $5 super chat. Hello, Brandy Nicole. I want to reach out about advertising, partnering with, or sponsoring the show. That's so nice. What's the best way I can get in touch? Use the contact form at undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. We'd love to hear from you, Mark. Two Ladies Midwest Adventures. Brandy Cruz, can my Julietta get a happy birthday today from you and Nicole? Hell yes, she can. Ready? Happy birthday to you. Nicole hates this. You can take yourself off camera if you want. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Julieta. Happy birthday to you.
There you go.
I did my best.
Yeah.
I have no shame, obviously. Okay, we'll get to our closing sanity check coming up next. First, happening this Thursday, Zach Abraham and his team at Bowler Capital are having another one of their Know Your Risk webinars on inflation. Their inflation webinars have been very popular because if you've been saving for retirement, you have a dream, like Mike and I have our dream. I want to run a doggy rescue and I'm going to need to save a lot of money to do that. But the question is, with the inflationary environment, everything costs more. Can the retirement you plan for be taken from you just because of inflation? I mean, vanish into thin air. Zach and his team call inflation the silent portfolio killer for a reason. So you can sign up to learn all about this issue on their free live webinar happening this Thursday, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Go to knowyourriskradio.com. knowyourriskradio.com. Again, it's completely free to sign up. You can learn about how Bulwark Capital is always seeking to lower risk, lower cost, give you as much upside as possible. And also, if you choose to, you can ask them all your burning questions about inflation. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24244. Go to knowyourriskradio.com. All right. So you have now a black woman who is likely to be the nominee for Democrats to be the next president of the United States. But I think more of black voters than that. I think that black voters, despite what Democrats might think, aren't so easily won over. And a black pastor in Chicago is proof of that. Let's talk about it in our closing sanity check. So when you look at some of the areas where things are toughest for black Americans, you know, inner city areas like in Chicago, where there has been, similar to here, universal Democratic control, you now have some black voters who are waking up and starting to realize, why do we continue to be so dedicated to the Democratic Party?
To the American people and patriots across this country, black people have been with the Democratic Party for over 60 years, and we have nothing. We don't own anything in our community. We have no schools. There's no businesses in the black community. All we have is crime and problems. So as a pastor, I'm standing up here with Bob Ferretti and some of the other black leaders. The truth of the matter is this. Why should black people keep voting for the Democrats when they don't have nothing? We need to understand this. We need to go and take a look at the Republican Party, but the Republican Party needs to be visual and need to do things in the black community. If we do that, we can make the change. We already know the Democrats are not going to do nothing. I'm the grandson of Eloise Barton, the second lady ever elected to the City Council of Chicago, 16th Ward. And now what we see, there's nothing that the Democrats have done or will they do across this country for black people but use us. So why not black people? Let us give the Republicans a chance to show what they can do for our communities as well.
I love that because he's not saying take your blind loyalty to Democrats and give your blind loyalty to Republicans. We shouldn't do that for either party. What he's saying is give them a chance, but Republicans need to make sure that they are showing up to take advantage of the opportunity. That has been your sanity check for today, and that has been today's episode of Undivided. Get those ballots in the mail. Don't wait. Who waits? That's lame. Sit down. Fill out your ballot. Talk to your kids about the importance of democracy and what you're doing. Do what Mike and I do. Sit down, have a nice drink. Go over the options. But, you know, vote before you get too drunk. Can't have you accidentally circling in Bob Ferguson's name because your vision's so blurry. Like seeing fours. Anyway. Okay, well, I just love you guys. We'll be back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. If you have not become an Undivided subscriber, help us continue this mission and this movement, especially in a critical election year. It's just $5 a month. You can sign up at UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com.